After vetoing the legislature's latest attempt at health care reform, Governor Scott this week sought to advance his own vision with a wide-ranging executive order.
It launches the first phase of a broader health care affordability initiative and directs my administration to use every executive and regulatory authority we have to make health insurance more affordable.
Plus, Brattleboro Memorial Hospital says it plans to close its birthing center. And a new poll shows a significant increase in the number of Vermonters looking to leave the state. All that and more ahead on Vermont This Week.
From the Vermont Public Studio in Winooski, this is Vermont This Week. Made possible in part by the Lintelak Foundation and Milne Travel. Here's moderator Mitch Wertlieb.
Hi, I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Friday, July 10th, and with us on the panel today, we have Lola Dufour from Vermont Public, Hannah Bassett from 7 Days, and Derek Brower from Vermont Public. And thank you all so much for being here today. Well, let's start with the big news on healthcare, a topic we have tackled so many times on this program. Lola Dufour, I want to start with you. The governor talking about this big executive order he made. He's got plans for healthcare in Vermont, trying to make insurance more affordable. I want to ask, though, by checking out what he said no to, because he did veto some things before he put out his own vision.
Right. So he vetoed a bill last month that really would have concentrated whatever savings we think that regulators are going to be able to get during the hospital budget setting process that's coming up. It would have really concentrated those savings in the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Right, so that's individuals buying on the exchange and also small businesses, but also in school employee health plans would have affected about 100,000 Vermonters. And the idea was we want to direct savings there because the ACA marketplace is really struggling. Mm-hmm. And if we save money on employee health, on school employee health insurance, that puts downward pressure on property taxes. So that was the pitch for that bill from Democrats. Phil Scott vetoed that and said, no, I don't want to sign on to something that does not spread out savings equally. He's like, everyone needs to get the same amount. And so that's what he said no to.
What did he say yes to? What's his vision?
Yeah, so his vision, he put out this this executive order, which in and of itself doesn't actually like do much. What it does is it directs administration officials to explore a whole bunch of proposals. This is a pretty wide-ranging EO. It's a potpourri of ideas. But, you know, if I can oversimplify, it's a generally...
Please do. It's healthcare we're talking about here.
It's a generally more deregulatory vision. What he wants to do is introduce kind of new insurance options, wants to make it easier for employers to go self-insured. He wants to open the door to association health plans, which is a type of health plan that businesses can kind of band together to buy. He also wants to reintroduce the idea of age rating in Vermont, which is allowing commercial insurers, not Medicaid or Medicare, but allowing commercial insurers to adjust premiums based on age, right? Because older people generally use more insurance. And the idea, his theory here, is that if we do that, younger people will get a better deal. They're more likely to come into the insurance pool, even though we are kind of risking, right? Older Vermonters getting a worse deal. We think maybe we could mitigate that with more people coming into the pool. So that's his vision.
Hannah Bassett, one of the things in that vision, as Lola was talking about, is, you know, the governor says he'd like to spread out these savings. Small businesses seem to be something he was very focused on here, saying that, you know, people with healthier employees may get a better deal and they should be able to seek out these association health plans. But again, what are the risks associated with that?
I think the equity issue is part of it. These association health plans were in Vermont previously, 5 or 6 years ago, so this isn't a totally new concept. So, somewhat similarly, the kind of age-adjusting mechanism that he proposed is common in almost every other state. I think Vermont and New York are the only two that don't have that at the moment. So The question is, who is coming into our health insurance networks and who is leaving it, and how does that impact the overall cost burden that everybody is meant to bear? If more young people who are healthy come in, that has the potential to lower those health costs. But to Lola's point, if the older folks leave, or are those proportions just don't stay in a healthy balance, it can have negative implications for everybody who's else in the system.
And Lola DeFore, sorry, but this is not new, right? I mean, this stuff has been floated before.
Yeah, I mean, he floated this at the beginning of the legislative session last year, right? So lawmakers went through a lot of these proposals already. And, you know, they weren't necessarily dead set against all of these ideas. For example, the chair of the House Healthcare Committee was like, I'm open to age rating if we really think it's going to make the pool healthier. The criticism I heard from lawmakers at that time is, like, we never saw any real numbers, right? Like, it kind of remained sort of ideating. It was an idea, and it wasn't a full-fleshed-out proposal. The other thing I heard was that... Right. Association health plans, another big concern, and also for more folks going self-insured, is that when that happens, fewer businesses go into the exchange. And specifically, it is businesses with healthier employees, fewer claims, that choose these options. Mm-hmm. And so that destabilizes the ACA exchange, which is already basically the most expensive in the country, right? Like, it's already really sick. And so the big concern that I heard from lawmakers, too, especially Democrats, was that we are really, and also the healthcare advocate, Mike Fisher, is that if you do that, you really threaten the ACA marketplace, which is already more vulnerable because of those federal subsidies going away, right, that we heard about. There's still some subsidies, but the enhanced subsidies went away. And then on top of that, right, something else I heard from the House Healthcare Committee chair was, you're proposing age rating because you think that's going to stabilize the ACA marketplace, draw more young people in, but you're also proposing association health plans, which would do the opposite. Mm. So... there's this concern that, you know, you would have one thing kind of acting against the other.
Plus, as you pointed out, I believe in your article, you know, to even implement this, the state of Vermont would need federal approval and changes in the state legislature, too, right?
So the legislature has to say yes to a lot of this, not all of it. Association health plans, yes. Lawmakers would have to say yes to this. Age rating, technically no, but... the administration has said they don't want to go forward with age rating unless they also apply for this federal waiver. Very complicated, would draw down money if we can get it. There are a bunch of ifs there. But that they would need legislative approval for. And lawmakers have already indicated they don't like quite buy that that is a strategy that's going to pan out. Right now we have... a legislature and a governor who have sort of kind of very different visions and are sort of preparing to have the same conversation that they had last year.
It does sound a little bit like a rinse and repeat. And we're not getting anything definitive yet on bringing down these healthcare costs completely. I mean, where do you see us having this exact same problem next year, for example?
Are we still going to have a healthcare system that's in crisis next year?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that's kind of what I was getting at here. Yeah.
I feel pretty confident in predicting that.
Well, both sides here are saying that there isn't enough evidence to back up the cost-saving claims. That was one of the reasons why Governor Scott vetoed S-190, what the Democrats had largely supported during the session and brought to his desk. But those same critiques and questions are also... out there with these proposals as well.
Yeah, so we're going to have to wait and see what happens, but I really appreciate the update on that, both of you. Thank you so much. I want to turn to you, Derek Brower, now, because you wrote a story for us at Vermont Public that's a little bit disturbing. I want to just caution folks that, you know, some of what we're about to discuss contains some discussion of sexual allegations that folks may find disturbing. There's a gentleman named Gregory Garcia that you were writing about. He came from California. He's practicing something called structural integration. here in Vermont that led to some sexual allegations. What can you tell us about the story?
Yeah, so Mr. Garcia has a pretty active structural integration business in Burlington. And I spoke with a woman who said that he had made a variety of sexually tinged comments during his treatment with her, but then also suggested something he called internal work, which entailed using a glove and putting his hand inside of her vagina for a few seconds. He did this twice, and after the second time, she told me she felt very uncomfortable with what he was doing and had felt violated by this. She complained to the state about his conduct, and that has triggered a long-running regulatory proceeding that is actually still under appeal right now. But the gist is here, this practitioner has never been registered with the state of Vermont to do any of this work.
And he's not required to be.
Well, you are required to register, yeah. However, you are not required to show any credentials that you essentially, you have to fill out a form to register, but you don't have to prove that you know what you're doing to do this kind of work. And that came to play in this situation as well, because this internal work, as he calls it, is not sanctioned by any of the professional organizations that set standards and codes of ethics for this kind of work.
Is structural integration, is that an alternative medicine? How would you describe what it actually is?
Yeah, you can think of it similar to massage therapy. It's geared toward pain relief typically. However, instead of working on the muscles, it works on connective tissue in the body. And so it's regulated very similarly or identically actually to massage therapy in the state, which is to say very lightly regulated.
Vermont is sort of an outlier when it comes to this certification in these alternative type of therapies, right?
Yeah, it is. In 45 states, to do massage therapy or structural integration or Rolfing, as it's sometimes known, you have to be certified, which generally means proving that you have either passed a test or you are a member of in good standing with a professional organization that has its own standards for this. Vermont and so there are three states that don't require any registration at all, and Vermont is one of is really the only state actually that has this regime where you have to register but not demonstrate any competency.
Well, I urge people to go look at the article at vermontpublic.org again, because you're bringing to light here some stories that were difficult to get, and I appreciate the sensitivity you took as well in speaking with the people who eventually agreed to speak with you, because it took a while, right?
Yeah, this was really sensitive for these folks. It was traumatic for this woman whose story is included in my reporting here. There was a lot of fear about speaking out about this.
Okay. Very much appreciate the reporting, Derek. Lola DeFore, let me turn back to you. We already know about the closing of Gifford Birthing Center in Vermont.
Copley,
I'm so sorry. Yes, thank you for correcting me there. I appreciate that. But the story now is that Brattleboro Memorial Hospital may be planning to close its birthing center. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so late last week, the leadership there announced that their board of directors, or board of trustees, sorry, had approved plans to close the birthing center within the next 6 to 9 months. And they've started the regulatory process that you would need before you wind down a program such as this. They're also, frankly, kind of sending out mixed messages, because they're saying this is sort of the plan, but, if either the state comes through with some ongoing funding to keep us alive, or if, we see a bunch of private donations come in, maybe we can stay alive, right? Mm. And so they're also kind of putting out a plea for help at the same time as they're saying, if this doesn't happen, then we are closing down. But basically, this birthing center is losing a ton of money. And that is not surprising, because birth centers generally lose a ton of money, particularly in rural hospitals where you have fewer births occurring. And that's because labor and delivery is expensive to deliver. It's a 24/7 service that requires specialized staff, right? You cannot schedule a lot of births. And so that means that your fixed costs are really high. Mm. And as we all know, rural hospitals across America, and certainly in Vermont, are in very precarious financial situations.
As a matter of fact, let's hear from a certified nurse midwife who works at Battle Memorial about the importance of this birthing center.
We already have patients that drive an hour to get to us, so to add on even an extra 30 minutes could be life or death for some people. I'm really worried about that.
I mean, that's pretty serious. You know, and again, this is a quality of life issue, too, for a lot of people that may want to move to Vermont and are looking at having a birthing center available in their area.
Yeah, I mean, it is, when I was writing the story, I landed on this stat, and, like, my mouth fell open. Like, only about 40% of rural hospitals in America still offer labor and delivery services.
Only 40%?
Only about 40%, and that is a shocking reflection of our priorities as a nation when it comes to maternal health, children, and also just rural America. But yes, it is a huge quality of life issue. It's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? Fertility rates are dropping. People are leaving rural areas, and then services that are necessary for them are then leaving, and that compounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think we talk a lot about things closing down or going away in rural parts of the state, but birthing centers are probably one of the most elemental ones, right? Like, you need a safe place to give birth.
Yeah, no question about it. And then, you know, this kind of leads to something that we wanted to talk about as well when we're talking about these quality of life issues. A new Green Mountain State poll came out recently, talking about a whole bunch of different things. You know, we're going to start with talking about the political outlook of the state, but it also got into some things that we were just talking about here with Vermont as a place to live. But let's start with the graphic, taking a look at the Democrats who are running for governor and lieutenant governor. And there's a bit of a surprise here. One of the names that I think people know in the state is Allie Richards, because she did a lot of work with Vermont Let's Grow Kids. She is running for the Democratic primary for governor, but she's behind to Amanda Janoux. Amanda Janoux putting up 20% numbers right now, Allie Richards at 12%. But of course, the big number for those who are listening and can't see the graphic, those who are undecided on a potential Democratic pick, up to 64%. Any surprises here in this poll for you, Derek? Let me start with you.
I mean, that 64% undecided is the big one. I mean, it shows it to me that this is still wide open at this stage of the game.
And what do you think, Hannah? Were you surprised to see Amanda Janoux coming out in front of Allie Richards when you looked at this poll first?
I think it's notable, to your point. Allie Richards has had a presence in the state that a lot of people might be familiar with through her Let's Grow Kids work. So name recognition is a huge part of the battle in a primary race. And with the way it's shaking out now, I think might have caught people off by surprise a little bit. But very much to Derek's point, 64% being undecided, I think speaks to a lot of people still do not know either name or either of their platforms well enough. And we're about a month out from the primary, and there's a lot of campaigning yet to be done.
I mean, Democrats have been kind of in the wilderness looking for the person they think that may be able to take on Governor Phil Scott. We're going to get to some of his numbers in just a moment. That Governor Scott's job approval rating. Now, he has enjoyed an incredible amount of job approval. In fact, at one point, I think he was considered the most popular governor in the country. But there's been a bit of a dip. If we take a look, there's been about a 5-point drop in his overall approval rating. Does this spell any trouble, do you think, just sort of looking at the tea leaves here for Governor Phil Scott in a general election? Well, let me start with you.
No.
That was pretty quick.
Yeah, look, yes. If you look at this, there's evidence that the bloom is coming off the rose, which is not surprising because Governor Scott has been in office for 10 years, and the longer you govern, the more people resent you for it. But he is still... that's pretty strong when you are the governor in the minority party, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as we previously discussed, his likely challengers remain completely unknown to the electorate, right? And they have some time to make that up, but not a ton. And so, no, I do think that, look, we're going to be talking about this, right? Polling indicates that people are really worried about the direction that the state is going in about affordability, and that seems to be dragging down his poll numbers a somewhat significant amount. Like, I don't think that that's not happening, but I don't, he is still the overwhelming favorite.
One thing I do want to note, Derek Brower, you were telling me before we went to air, you did a little deeper digging on this and found that some of that dip in Scott's performance rating didn't come from what I would have intuitively thought, which is Democrats and liberals, but actually from conservatives in Vermont. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. The pollsters noted that people who identified as Republican or conservative were less likely than they have been to approve of Scott's performance right now. It's hard to know exactly what to make of that, but it would seem to point to the polarization we're seeing nationally here as well. And you know, Scott has always had to strike this moderate line in Vermont, particularly on social issues. And
that's not supposed to affect us here in the bubble of Vermont, Derek. What are you talking about? I can't believe that.
Yeah, we're not totally immune.
No, apparently not. Let's get to some of the numbers that Lola was referring to, sort of the overall rating of Vermont as a place to live. And we're seeing some alarming numbers there, too. The number of people who are, you know, we're seeing a dip in Vermont as an sort of an affordable and desirable place to live. And then there's the likelihood of moving outside of Vermont within 5 years. And those numbers seem to be trending up. Hannah Bassett, you know, again, we were talking about things like birthing centers and young people and the attractiveness of moving to Vermont. What do these numbers sort of speak to you? And what do they say to you when you see them?
I think there are a couple different ways to look a little more closely at this. There's a difference in the populations here. Younger people might have a very different thought process to staying in Vermont than people who might be a little older looking to buy a house right away. So that certainly influences some of this data that we're looking at. But if we're trying to get relatively younger people into this state, fill our public schools, balance out our healthcare system, it's hard when then there are not birthing centers. There's a lot of talk about small local schools consolidating. These are just some of the things realistically that people are first to scan for when looking to stay in a community or move to a community. And I think these are all at play in people deciding whether or not Vermont is the right long-term home for them. Mm.
Yeah, and I do wonder, you know, if people talk about, well, they're, you know, Chittenden County is a desirable place to live, but it is so and getting more unaffordable. We've talked about the housing issues and some of the school issues you're talking about here. I mean, I'm wondering about these numbers and what we just talked about with the political aspect of it. What do people running for governor have to do to look at these numbers and say, you know, is there something they can latch onto here and say, I'm going to make this a topic that I can actually run on? I mean, Lola, do you think there's any opportunity here?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think everyone's kind of making the same pitch. Everyone's using the word affordability here and, I mean, nationwide. And so, yeah, that is the that's the pitch that everyone is making. Amanda Janew has leaned really heavily into kind of the tax the rich, tax second homeowners rhetoric, which is working in a lot of places, particularly in Democratic primaries right now. We have this insurgent kind of populist, progressive left. And you could definitely see her candidacy and early signs of success in that. And then you have Ali Richards saying, I made our historic child care bill happen, right? And so I know how to direct the levers of government to make meaningful differences in people's lives. And then, of course, you have Phil Scott that is saying, I've been talking about affordability for 10 years. I'll keep talking about it for two more.
I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes out in the general. I want to get folks updated on a story that we have been talking about over the last few weeks. Derek Brower, the family of a man who was fatally shot by a state trooper. The state trooper did not have any charges brought against him. They are now suing the Vermont State Police. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is the family of Scott Garvey, who's a man who had schizophrenia, who was shot in his apartment when police came to do essentially a welfare check. There were some disturbances in the apartment building, and the family has maintained since this happened that this was an avoidable event and that the state police did not show enough care and patience and understanding in the situation. And they are planning to bring as much attention to this as they can nationally and in the state to try to force some change. And, as I recount the details, it's an all too familiar story in Vermont. The family's well aware of that, and I think they are hoping that this is a way they can make a difference.
Yeah, I appreciate the update on that story. I want to point people to, we don't have time to get too deep into it now, but Hannah Bassett, you did a great story about estrogen therapy in Vermont and about how now it is being sort of brought back into favor a little bit. Things have changed over the last 20 years, right, about the effectiveness for women under the age of 60.
Yeah, this past winter, the FDA changed some of its labeling guidelines, removed one of its most severe black box warnings from the label. That's just the latest in these changes. About 20 years ago or so, the recommendation was largely for women pre-menopause not to seek out estrogen therapy. There was a study that showed some adverse effects, but that study has since been re-looked at, reconsidered, and for younger women who are pre-menopause or within about 10 years of menopause, often these are great medications to treat those really difficult perimenopausal symptoms, which include hot flashes, of course, but also brain fog, stress, anxiety. But a challenge is having enough access to that medication and access to providers who are able to hear patients out on that.
Absolutely. Check out the story in 7 days. And finally, just want to let people know that the Major League Baseball draft is happening tomorrow. Caden McCarthy of Chester, Vermont, may go in the top three rounds. He's expected to. If he does get picked in the first three rounds, that will be the highest that a player from Vermont has ever been picked in the Major League Baseball draft. We'll have to leave it there. I want to thank our panel so much today. Lowell DeFore from Vermont Public, Hannah Bassett from 7 Days, and Derek Bauer from Vermont Public. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. See you again next Friday for Vermont This Week.